Hey, you're listening to Fanboy Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast, episode 15.
I have a story, a bitter anthem, for everyone to hear about this kid who just don't like me, and that's a solid fact. They say he's hunting me, and as you see, I'm all swelled up with fear, cause I can't get him off my back. If you
I'm Eric.
And we are the Fanboys of Strike Back. Every week we get together and we pick we read the comics that came out, and then one of us will pick which was the best book. We'll go to our site, fanboystrikeback.com, and we'll write a review of that best book. And then we'll come here to the podcast, we'll talk about that and all the other books that came out that week. And this week we're also going to be throwing in a couple of video game reviews. I'm going to be talking a little bit about Halo 3, which has been running my life, and Eric is going to be talking about The Legend of Zelda Phantom Hourglass, which I'm sure has been doing the same thing for him.
Oh, yeah.
And just to let you know, there are going to be spoilers in our comic reviews and probably in our game reviews, so if you don't want to be spoiled, you want to pause the podcast and come back later. But Eric, you had a little indie pick this week, so why don't you go ahead and tell us about it?
I did. This week, out of sheer boredom of my other books, I decided to pick up The Vinyl Underground by Spencer Gane and Stewart. And this is a Vertigo book. It's a number one issue, so I figured might as well just try it out. And what it basically is, the subtitle is Cracking Occult Crimes in the UK. And so I figured, well, that's kind of an interesting subject, and I'm always kind of into those types of premises with TV shows like Eerie Indiana or movies like Ghostbusters. I mean, it's not like the genre hasn't been tackled before, but I figured I'd give it a try. And basically, what I liked with this one was it kind of took an interesting turn with the different characters. The characters are all kind of, well, the main character is kind of a D-list level celebrity in Britain, or is supposed to be. And he's the son of a soccer player who died tragically, and then the girl in the group, she's kind of the tough, hard ass, and then the second guy in the group is kind of this weird techie guy, and it's just kind of an interesting bunch of people. And basically, this issue spends a lot of time on character development, which I thought was kind of the bad part about it, because I kind of really wanted to get into more occult stuff. But we're introduced to a thing where a child is getting killed in a kind of cult-like ritual. And by the end of this issue, our batch of characters are off on the mission to figure out who's behind or who's responsible for it. So far, it's not really an occult type of genre. It's just more of a crime, an odd, bizarre crime story with a very colorful cast of characters. It's kind of like CSI meets something from the E Channel. So it was okay. I picked it this week basically because it was by far the most interesting thing that I read. It was definitely outside the box of the normal stuff that I was reading. I did really like the artwork. Simon Gane is the penciler on it. And what I really felt about this is it really felt like it was taking place in London. It did have a very UK vibe to it. It had that kind of indie feel to it. So it was good. I really enjoyed it. So good. It's a number one. Good place to hop on to the series for anyone who's interested in trying it out. So, yeah. So another book I picked up this week, probably a close second, was the Cyborg Superman special, The Tale of the Green Lantern Corps.
Oh, I didn't get this!
Well, it had its ups and downs. It really had its ups and downs. So I'm going to go into the good and then the bad. The good part about this was the Parallax special was really just examining Parallax and Kyle and the history of Parallax. This one actually moved the plot of the story forward, the Green Lantern War story. And what happened at the end of this was you see actually what happens when the Sinister Corps finally strikes Earth for the first time. Like, before, we just seen them kind of up in the atmosphere and they were coming. This is where it actually gets brought onto Earth soil. And they attack New York, the Statue of Liberty goes down. The Justice League gets involved, and Superman starts, you know, there's the fight between Superman, Cyborg, Superman. I really like that. And so it really feels like the scale, you know, I've said this before, but it really continues to make the feel of the story on a very big, epic scale, and I really enjoy that part. The downside about this was the first half of this issue was an origin of the Cyborg Superman. Now, the origin, it was kind of disappointing, because basically what it is, it's a very kind of rehash of the Fantastic Four origin.
Right,
and you see
right.
that Hank Henshaw was an astronaut, and him and his wife and brother-in-law and friend were in a, you know, they were in a space shuttle, and there was radiation poisoning or something, and they all got superpowers. But then the superpowers kind of turned and disintegrated their bodies, and they reacted very negatively towards him. And basically, he wasn't able to save his wife from what happened, and he also wasn't able to save himself, but he was able to transfer his consciousness into different machines. And then you get brought up into the whole story of his hatred for life and his vendetta against Superman, how he got brought into that, which was okay, but really what that was, it was just a service to new readers. And, well, that's important, you know, I mean, it's kind of getting to be an older character, and a lot of new readers that can understand didn't know the origin. I just wasn't really thrilled by it, and the fact that it's not a very original origin, it felt very rehashed to me, and it's just like, it just kind of felt like a copy. So this issue was kind of 50-50 for me.
Yeah, you know, just like we said last week, I moved, and I moved to a smaller town, and I moved away from the comic book store that I've been going to for 5 years, and so now I'm in, like, this little comic book store, and it's so hard, because I know that I'm going to forget stuff, and they don't get everything in, and so, yes, I've missed this, which, yeah, that makes me upset, because I really do like the Cyborg Superman. I do agree with you about the origin and everything, though, but, like, I really did want to read that. And I totally spaced out on it, so that sucks.
Yeah, it's something, like, if you're into the story, you're definitely going to want to pick this up, because, like I said, it does keep the plot going. But, I wasn't overwhelmed by it. Like, I wasn't emotionally overwhelmed by it like I was with the Parallax special. There wasn't enough story in this for me, because really it focused more on Superman fighting the Cyborg and the Justice League rather than a lot of the Green Lanterns. So... yeah, I was just kind of like, I was underwhelmed by it. So, what would have been your pick of the week if you had picked?
Well, this was a pretty light week. I didn't have a whole lot. I only got 4 books, which they're all actually kind of okay. But if I would have had to pick one, and I'm really, really surprised, but I would have picked Green Lantern Corps number 16. Did you pick this up at all?
I have not been following the Green Lantern Corps book at all.
Well, the core book has been focusing on the Sinestro Corps War, but the core book is, obviously, it's not as popular as the main Green Lantern book, and so it's basically just focusing on the war, like behind-the-scenes war between the Lanterns and the Sinestro Corps, and it's pretty much following Kilowog, and the main focus of the core book since the Sinestro Corps War is the battle for Mogo, because you find out that Mogo is responsible for the Green Lantern rings being capable of finding new lanterns, and so they're focusing a big portion of their attack on Mogo, because they're basically trying to cancel the source. So if they destroy Mogo and they destroy the lanterns, no new lanterns can be found, which is very, very interesting. And so...
That's a cool plot twist.
Yeah, it's cool, because it's like I've tried... Like I said before, like, I have to give it up to Dave Gibbons, who's working with Jeff Johns, because they're bringing a story to, like, ridiculous ideas. Like, yes, everyone likes Mogo. He's a big planet Green Lantern, and it's cool, but it's a really ridiculous idea. And so what they're doing now is they're focusing on him, and they're saying, like, he is so important. And you really feel that in the book. Like, the book is basically, it's a war book. Like, there's a lot of killing going on, and you see how desperate these Lanterns are to defend Mogo, and, like, how important he is to the whole Lanterns. And there's actually a really cool sequence where you saw in Green Lantern how the Guardians have rewritten the book of Oa, and they're now enabling lethal action. And while you didn't really see that being a profound change in the Green Lantern book, it is a huge change in this core book, because the Green Lanterns are getting just slaughtered, and they're getting killed, because while they can protect themselves, all they're doing is basically trying to knock back or knock out the Sinestro Corps members. And so when they up the ante and they can all of a sudden kill, it finally turns the tide, and it finally like lets them actually win the battle. But the very, very cool part about this book is that there is this random Green Lantern. I forgot his last name. His last name's Yats, but I don't know what his first name is. But throughout the core book, they've been talking about how he's very important, and they've had Kilowog protect him, and they've had Arisa protect him, and they haven't explained why yet, but they just, all of a sudden, they just tied in that he is important to the Green Lantern Corps as Mogo is, and that there's a direct connection between this rookie Green Lantern and Mogo. So I'm not sure what it is, but it's very, very interesting, and so I'm actually pretty excited to see where that connection is and where it's going. Yeah, this book is doing a great job of like, you don't have to read it at all to read Green Lantern, you don't have to read it at all to get the whole story for the Sinestro Corps, but it's a great companion title, and that's exactly what it should be, so.
Okay. Well, one other book I wanted to talk about real quick was Countdown Presents The Search for Palmer Crime Society. So this is the next issue in the Search for Ray Palmer. And what this is Kyle, Don, and Jason go to another Earth yet again, but they meet the Crime Syndicate, or the Crime Society, of Earth 3, which formerly, before the original Crisis, was the Crime Syndicate, and basically was an evil version of the Justice League in a planet full of villains, and Lex Luthor.
You've already lost me.
Hero.
I'm so confused already.
So, well, basically, it's just an evil Justice League with one hero, and it's Lex Luthor.
Okay.
This book takes that, and says, okay, well, that with the new continuity, now there's the Crime Society, which is basically the same thing, an evil Justice League, and instead of Lex Luthor being the only hero on the planet, the only hero is the Jokester, which is kind of an anti-Joker. So it was kind of interesting to see the Joker as a good guy, and he's basically fighting Batman, but they try and make him a little bit more relatable, and of course they get there, and no one really knows what to make of him, and Jason hates him right off the bat, especially, and the Jokester has no idea why. But throughout this book, they go into escape into another world, and they escape into dwell a dense world, and the only reason I'm bringing this book up is because what we got is we got an origin story for Duella Dent, or Joker's daughters, who was a pivotal, you'll remember, as a pivotal role from the first issue of Countdown, where she was murdered. And
right.
She's always kind of been this side character with the Teen Titans, and as a longtime DC person, I didn't even know, what her real origin was. Like, it was obvious she's not really the Joker's daughter, but she took on that persona. She's been called Harley Quinn in the past. Her real name was Duella Dent, so you didn't know if she was one of Harvey's kids or something like that. So this explains that, and I'm not going to get into it because it is a huge multiverse story. But it was kind of interesting. It was nice to finally get an origin character, or an origin story, although the character whose origin we're given is already dead, unfortunately. But it was interesting. It didn't really focus on Jason, Kyle, or Donna at all. But still interesting.
Okay, another good book that came out this week. Nothing too shiny came out, but it was a pretty decent week. Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 8, Issue 7 came out. And last issue was Issue 6, and it was the first one not done by Joss Whedon, but done by Brian K. Vaughan. And it was really weird, because it was really, really good, and it was right on par with Joss Whedon. And so I was really interested to see what Issue 7 was going to be like, and just to see if Brian K. Vaughan really is that good at writing Buffy, or if I was just coming over from, Josh's departure. But Brian K. Vaughan knows how to write Buffy, and it's actually really amazing, because this issue was awesome. It's kind of confusing if you're not a Buffy fan, but what's going on is that, oh man, it is kind of confusing. Buffy the Vampire Slayer was the only Slayer. A Slayer is one girl chosen to fight the demons, the monsters, all the things hidden in the closet, blah, blah, blah. At the very end of the Buffy show, every single girl in the world that had the potential to be a Slayer was unlocked into a Slayer. So now there are thousands of girls around the world that have super strength, super healing. There's basically a whole bunch of super-powered girls. And now Buffy is trying to...
That was at the end of season 7?
Yeah, that was actually the end of the show. So season 8 picks up with Buffy trying to be a leader to all these girls, and you have, like, Buffy cells, where they have certain Slayers dressed up as Buffy in different parts of the world, so that no one knows who the true Buffy is, and it's very, very thought out, and Brian K. Vaughan is actually doing a arc on Faith, because Faith was another vampire slayer during the show, and Faith was kind of the dark slayer, and her and Buffy had to go at it. But what we're dealing with in this is that there is a slayer that's above the other slayers, and right now she's basically being taught and trained to kill Buffy. And I talked about this issue, or the last issue, a couple weeks ago, and she's very in high society, and she's from, you know, England. And so what this issue is dealing with is Faith having to infiltrate this party and try to kill this girl. And anyone who knows the show knows Faith is that, you know, Faith is, she's just the bad girl. She's the original bad girl. And how this is kind of playing out is that she's trying to get close to this girl, and she's trying to kill her, but she's having issues with it because Faith has killed before, and she's really trying to atone for that. And so the thought of killing again is really, she's really struggling with it. And this new Slayer is actually seeing that, and she's seeing that Faith has this killer instinct, and she's almost a kindred spirit to that. So not knowing anything about Faith's back history, it basically ends with this girl thinking that Faith is going to be her new friend, and she's enlisting Faith's help to kill Buffy. So it's really good. It's very confusing. Obviously, if you haven't seen the show, you can't pick up this book. There's no way. But if you are a fan of the show, you should definitely check it out. I was a little weary about someone else writing it than Joss, but Brian K. Vaughan has done a wonderful job.
It sounds like this book is really kind of a love letter to the fans of the show.
It is.
I didn't watch the show. No idea, like, what you're talking about. I know who some of the characters are, but, I have no idea about the story development, so it really feels like it's for the fans.
It definitely is for the fans, and if you are a fan, it's definitely one of those great things, because, you know, something like this never happens. If a show ends, you don't see that, and it's cool, because nowadays we're getting more to the point where we have online petitions, and, you know, same thing happened to Joss Whedon when Firefox came out. Or what did I say? I just said
Firefly.
When Firefly came out, it was a great show. It was loved, and it didn't do well. And that's understandable, but it failed. And fans petitioned, and it came back, and they made Serenity, which was the movie. Serenity did very well, and actually, they're re-releasing the Serenity DVD because it sold so well, and so now they're thinking about making a sequel to the movie. So it's cool that we live in this, you know, this kind of new age where what we say, what we do, can actually really make an impact.
Yeah, the fan community has more of a voice now than it ever has before.
Definitely. The last book I wanted to talk about was Uncanny X-Men number 491. Ed Brubaker, I really like him. He's doing amazing stuff on Daredevil and Captain America, and I love his first run on Uncanny X-Men, but this second run has been struggling mighty fierce. We had the return of Morlock, we had the return of Magneto, but he doesn't have his powers, and it was somewhat interesting, but it wasn't compelling at all. Like, I'm not going to remember the story, and I didn't care about the story or the characters, and It wasn't bad. Like, it wasn't bad writing. Salvador LaRocca did the art, and the art wasn't bad at all. It just wasn't memorable. Like, it just wasn't a story that you care about. The reason why I do want to talk about this is that next month we are getting into the end, hopefully, of Endangered Species, because we still haven't really seen much going on there. But we are going into the Messiah Complex. And the Messiah Complex.
I'm kind of excited about that.
Yes, like, this is going to be the biggest X-Men event in a long time. Because the last actual X-Men crossover was maybe the Age of Apocalypse, something like that. It was like mid to late 90s that there's been a major X-Men crossover. And with the rumblings and everything that this story is getting, like, this is going to be something big. And basically it is one mutant that has the ability to bring mutants back from extinction or to totally extinguish the mutant race. And it's looking like it's going to be a very, very big deal. We're going to see some major characters back. Mr. Sinister is going to have a big role in it. What Beast is trying to track down and endangered species is going to lead straight into it. So while I haven't been a huge fan of what Brubaker has been doing right now, like, I'm very, very excited about the Messiah Complex. And I have a very, very good feeling about it.
Cool. Yeah, I'm actually going to pick it up and try and go along with it. Okay, so that does it for our very small round of book reviews this week with not much coming out. Hopefully next week will be a little bit better. This week, we told you we're going to be doing some new features. This week, we want to do some video game reviews because both of our lives have been... A significant amount of time has been taken up playing some new video games lately.
Yeah, sure has.
David's got Halo 3. I've been splitting my time equally between Metroid Prime 3 and The Legend of Zelda, The Phantom Hourglass. So I'll specifically be talking about The Legend of Zelda. So before I do that, why don't... I'll let David go ahead and tell you what he thinks of Halo 3 so far.
Okay. My history with Halo, first off, is that I don't like first-person shooters. They make me sick for some reason, just the whole motion. So I've never liked first-person shooters. I never played the original Halo for like 2 years after it came out, and I actually started playing it at LAN parties. Became a very big fan. Halo is the only first-person shooter I like, and the reason I like Halo is because it does have a very, very compelling story. Most first-person shooters it's the game, and then a story is wrapped around it to just try to fill in the blanks, but I really feel like Halo is kind of a story with a game built around it. And I've read all the Halo novels, and it is really a great, epic, sci-fi story. When Halo 2 came out, it was a big deal. Like, going to a release of Halo is like sitting in line for Star Wars nowadays. I mean, you go to a midnight release of Halo. Halo 2 made $125 million in its first day. You know, it's ridiculous. Like, you're lining up for hours just to buy this game. And Halo 2 was a great game. But everyone, you know, universally was pretty much upset with the way the game ended. Because it's okay to have a cutoff ending, and it's okay to want, you want to be, you know, left wanting more, but it really ended too abruptly. The whole story is that there's a war going on between humans and these aliens called the Covenant, and at one point, Master Chief, who is your main character, he's a super soldier, he's on his way back to Earth, and it just ends. And you're like, are you serious? And so it's been 3 years since that, and a lot of gamers were really upset. And so I was going into Halo 3 expecting a lot, and I was blown away. Like, the graphics on the game it's amazing. The story is great. It ties up everything. This will definitely not be the last Halo game, but they're saying it's the end of the Halo trilogy, and it's true. Like, there is an end to a game, and I think that Bungie, the developer, really knew that they had to satisfy fans with the story. And they definitely did it. I've been playing on Xbox Live nonstop since. So it's, I don't know. Halo is something else when it comes to video games. It's become its own thing. And it's, I mean, Eric and I were very big fans of Star Wars. And when you go see Star Wars, and when there's a Star Wars movie coming out, half the fun is waiting in line for it. And it's kind of the same thing with Halo. Half the fun is going to that midnight release, sitting in line with the other guys, just kind of talking about it, the anticipation, and then getting it home at 1 o'clock in the morning and, you know, firing up your Xbox and getting online and playing, which I've been doing. The multiplayer is amazing. The community is great. So there's absolutely nothing bad I can say about this game. It's definitely a 5 out of 5. Bungie took their time, they did their work, and I would recommend it to absolutely anyone.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I like Halo 2, but my role in playing Halo is mostly to be shot up by the kids, so
yeah,
it's a little bit different to me.
It can definitely be a humbling experience.
It is, it really is. So, yeah, I've been playing The Legend of Zelda Defense of Hyrule, and for those of you who listen to the top 5 video game countdowns, you all know my favorite series of all time, The Legend of Zelda series for video games. I think it's epic, it's been around for so long, it's part of culture now, and it's like the Lord of the Rings of video games. It holds a very nostalgic feeling for me, so I was very much looking forward to this. This is one of the more side quest games in Zelda continuity, and there's been the core games, which usually involve a whole new Link, and it's a whole brand new story, and it's epic and it's big, and you have Zelda and Ganon and Triforce, and Hyrule gets destroyed once again, and you're off to save the world, and then generally they'll follow it up pretty quickly with a sequel before they move on to a whole new arena and restructure the game again. This is one of those sequel games, and I've generally been a fan of those sequel games. Link's Awakening was extremely well on the original Game Boy. Majora's Mask, the Ocarina of Time, and that was an especially good sequel. That was actually very dark and very, like, kind of a disturbing Zelda game, actually. It's kind of the Empire Strikes Back of Zelda games. This one follows the Wind Waker, and I've mentioned before, Wind Waker, I think, had the best storyline of all Zelda games, and the ending of that really felt like, wow, is this the last Zelda game they're ever going to make? Because they kind of put a cap on the end of it, and they said, well, everything's gone, everything's wiped out. Like, you have some feeling of accomplishment, but at the same time, you pretty much lost everything. So
that's true.
It was interesting. So I was very curious how they develop a story for a sequel to Wind Waker. And basically this game picks up directly where Wind Waker left off, where Link has set sail on the ocean that now has buried Hyrule, and he's with Zelda and a gang of pirates, and basically they're off to explore new lands, presumably from what we learned at the end of Wind Waker, to find a new Hyrule, to find a new land to call home. And so this story picks up, there's a phantom ghost ship that's been haunting the seas, and Zelda gets abducted. And then, of course, Link goes after, and we're off on an adventure. And so far, the game is really good. There's a lot of sailing in it, but mostly the feeling of exploration that you really get in Zelda games is really up to the ante in this game. Much in the way of Wind Waker, where you had to sail different islands, there's a lot of mapping out where you're going to go. There's just so much to see and so much to explore, and there's not any kind of linear path to follow. They'll give you tips on where you need to go, but, on the way, you could stop at every little island and talk to all kinds of different villagers and people there, and it's really kind of fascinating. Where this game really shines, though, is the control scheme, and this game is completely controlled by the stylus. The D-pad is gone, and much in the way of how The Legend of Zelda was reworked for the Wii controls with the motion sensor, this game is really worked for everything on the DS. The controls with the stylus, I was a little wary of it at first, but it becomes more and more intuitive. The only problem I would say is there's a slight problem when you're trying to make Link do, like, somersaults, but with the fact that it's a 3D game but there's no Z targeting, I was also worried about that, but it works very well as far as targeting enemies, working around them. Things I didn't expect with the DS are very cool. Like, there's situations where to solve puzzles you have to blow out torches, and you get this clue, and I sat there searching for a half an hour for an item that I thought I'd have to, like, wave at a torch to blow it out. You actually blow at the DS, and Link will blow out the torch, and that was really
cool.
And then, there's prisoners behind doorways that you're trying to talk to, and you actually have to shout at your DS to get them to respond back to you. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. Like, these are just little perks that immerse you more into that world, and I really didn't see that coming. So I was really blown away by how well they've made it work with the DS. The graphics are kind of a faux cel-shaded look, but still works very well. It's kind of like a 3D version of the Link to the Past / Wind Waker graphics. So it works really well. It's a good looking game. The controls are really tight, albeit new. They take a little while to get used to. But really, it's a Zelda game, and for any Zelda fan out there, like, you owe it to yourself to play this game. It's fantastic. And I'm only about a quarter of the way through it right now. But it feels very much... It's not one of the core games, like I said, but it feels very much in the vein of Link's Awakening, where it's a very fulfilling, upbeat side story or sequel to one of the core games. And so, very much enjoying that. Another game I want to talk about really quick is Metroid Prime 3. And this is, while not as hyped as the other first-person shooter we were just talking about, Halo 3, this is a first-person shooter. This game is much quieter, but at the same time, so good. And this is another game where it's the end of a trilogy. And because it's the end of a trilogy, they're not... Retro Studios, who made the game, said this is the last Metroid Prime game there's going to be. They've really upped the ante to develop some kind of story to where this is going to pay off. And I know David has a very big problem with the storytelling elements of Metroid Prime games.
There are no storytelling elements of Metroid Prime games.
There are. The trouble was, the story really picked up at the end of Metroid Prime. Because at the end of Metroid Prime, you face off against Metroid Prime, who's this kind of gooey, Phazon-infused creature. And at the end of it, it sucks in a piece of you, and after the credits, you see that it gives birth to a Dark Samus. And that becomes the protagonist of Metroid Prime 2, which, while was a great game and was visually stunning, was just so hard. Like, the difficulty level was...
It was completely hard. It's one of the only games that I didn't finish. And it wasn't so much that it was, like, hard. It was just, like, overly tedious hard. So it was like, it was made it to the point where, like, it just wasn't even fun to play the game anymore.
Yeah, there was moments where I was just like, it'd just take you hours to trek back through the world, or there was one boss for me that I just could not beat, and it was just frustrating every time. So it was the first Metroid game I'd never beat, and that was kind of sad for me. But Metroid Prime 3, they took the difficulty level back down, and they've also changed the overworld a bit to where you can shortcut through levels, or you can call your ship to you and move around the world much quicker, so you're not spending hours backtracking to certain points, which was something that definitely needed to happen. Another great thing about it is working with the control system of the Wii, the point and shoot with the wand is awesome. I have nothing bad to say about that. The targeting works great. It's a fantastic feeling. It makes you even more immersed into that world, and it's very intuitive. You pick it up right away. There's no issue with it. Plus the interactiveness with, like, the grappling hook and how you have to grapple onto things with one hand and then yank it back. Like, you really feel like you're latching onto things and pulling it off, and I love that. So the story is good. It feels much more epic. I guess the best thing about this game, I'm kind of getting sidetracked here, but the best thing about this game, I think, really is the atmosphere. And this is something that all the Metroid games have really strived for, is you really are given the sense that, at least in the later levels, that you're alone on this very alien world. And there's no one with you. The sound effects and the music both are very kind of haunting in a way. You don't hear them... I don't know. It's very alien, I guess is the way to put it. But it works incredibly well with all the different worlds that you're into. Plus, at the beginning, to go on the flip side of that, in the beginning, we were kind of treated to a very Halo-esque first level where you do get a team up with other bounty hunters, with Federation troopers. There's some actually really good voice acting with that. And it's kind of cool to see Samus actually fighting alongside someone because you've never seen that before. And another great thing about this game is we are given origins to characters like Mother Brain or Aurora units, which are big organic supercomputers, which, you know, of course we played against Mother Brain in Metroid and Super Metroid. So it's kind of cool to get that backstory. So I've been very, very happy with that game so far.
Yeah, I got Metroid Prime. I didn't have a lot of time to play it. I played about 2 minutes of it. And then I got Halo 3. And so I haven't played Metroid Prime 3 in about a month, so yeah. I'm done with Halo now, so I'm looking forward to going back and beating Metroid Prime 3, but my life got a little sidetracked there for a second.
Yeah, well, the issues you had about it with, like, the backtracking and stuff like that, they've gone to length to reverse that or fix it. So I think you'll enjoy that a little bit more now.
Well, I'm looking forward to it then.
Cool. Okay, well, that does it for us this week. If you have any questions, comments, or things you want us to talk about on future shows, you can always email us at contact@fanboysstrikeback.com. You can go to our website at www.fanboysstrikeback.com, and you can visit our forums, and there you can respond to forums that we've started and put your opinion down, or you can start a forum or start a topic yourself, and we'll respond to it. We always like to hear what you guys have to think. So also, you can download the show from the website, or you can go to iTunes and download it there. You can subscribe to it for free, and we always appreciate reviews. If you'd like to leave us a review, we appreciate the ones that we've gotten so far, and we love to hear what you guys think.
Right, and then you can always head over to Podcast Alley. You can get the podcast there, or pretty much at any podcatcher right now. And like Eric said, leave us any reviews, positive, negative. Any feedback is good feedback. It lets us know what you guys want to see on the show. And of course, we're on the MySpace, so you can come to myspace.com/thefanboystrikeback. We always put our Book of the Week blog there, and then you can friend us and see who all of our friends are, and just create a nice social circle, because that's what the internet is for. So that wraps it up for this week. It was a very slow and light week, but we'll be back next week with a bigger week. So I'm David.
I'm Eric.
And we'll see you guys next week. You make me